From NPR News, this is Foreign Dispatch, a weekly roundup of some of the best coverage of news and events filed by NPR's correspondents from around the globe. I'm Kevin Beasley. This week, the lady leaves Burma, one man's death in Syria, and the women boxers of Afghanistan. The opposition leader in Myanmar, Aung San Suu Kyi, has made her first trip outside the country in 24 years to attend an economic conference in Thailand. Suu Kyi has spent much of the last two decades in jail or under house arrest in Myanmar, also known as Burma, while her country was ruled by a military junta. She had been offered trips abroad before, but refused, fearing the generals would not allow her to return. But now, after recent political reforms, Suu Kyi is a member of parliament and is free to travel outside her country. Michael Sullivan sent this report from Bangkok on the first day of her visit.
Mahachai is about an hour's drive south of the Thai capital, but it seemed a lot more like Myanmar when Aung San Suu Kyi's motorcade pulled up outside the local shrimp market shortly after 9 this morning. Hundreds of her supporters greeting her like a rock star. May Su, May Su, they chanted. Mother Su, Mother Su. No matter that Suu Kyi never left her car, nobody seemed to care. Many held pictures of her high above their heads, some portraits of Suu Kyi with her father, independence leader Aung San. Mahachai was a good place for the opposition leader to start her world tour. It's home to many of the estimated 2.5 million migrants from Myanmar living in Thailand. Many come for economic reasons, some political ones. Some come legally, some not. But all of them showed up this morning to show their loyalty, their love, for the woman they see as the real leader of their country.
Aung San Suu Kyi, she can make the good government, she can make a good economy, she can make a good country, I think.
That's 30-year-old Mo Min, a construction worker who left Myanmar 5 years ago, after the brutal 2007 military crackdown on the monk-led Saffron Revolution. Aung San Suu Kyi isn't president, not yet anyway, but he believes so much in the lady and what she can help achieve, he reckons he's probably going back home soon.
I think about 2 years, maybe, we all go to Burma, because my country now start developed yet for economy, because the lady...
He's not the only one who's thinking of returning home. 32-year-old Neiwe Ah came here a decade ago to work in the shrimp processing industry. She makes about $10 a day, far more than what she could make back in Myanmar, for now at least. But I'm confident Aung San Suu Kyi can help all the workers here and in Myanmar too, she says. She says she believes the political reforms in her country and Suu Kyi's presence in parliament will help the economy improve so fast. She's thinking about going back next year. Later in the morning, in her first speech abroad in more than two decades, Aung San Suu Kyi told a crowd packed into a sweltering side street that she promised to do her best for them and for Myanmar. And she delighted many when she told the crowd, "There are so many of you here, I feel like I'm in my own country." She will have a chance to see many more of her compatriots when she visits a refugee camp on the Thai-Burmese border later this week. A trip that will serve as a reminder that there are still many obstacles facing Myanmar as it tries to move forward with political and economic reform and development, while trying to satisfy the demands of the country's ethnic minorities, some of whose militias have been fighting Myanmar's military for decades, demanding greater autonomy from the central government. Atrocities committed by both sides over the years have driven many civilians seeking shelter across the border into Thailand. Convincing them that it's safe to return would be difficult for anyone, even Aung San Suu Kyi. For NPR News, I'm Michael Sullivan in Bangkok.
Coming up, one man's death in Syria and the women boxers of Afghanistan. This is Foreign Dispatch. I'm Kevin Beasley. The violence in Syria has claimed more lives by far than any other recent Arab uprising. It's thought at least 12,000 people have died. There were lives behind those numbers. NPR's Kelly McEvers introduces us to one of them, a bright young man who believed in something and died for it.
Basil Shahadeh started out as an IT major in Syria, but it became clear that what he really wanted to do was make films. In 2009, he shot this film about humanitarian groups bringing aid to drought victims in northwest Syria. His friends say he had a knack for finding joy in despair. Basil finished at the top of his class, and after spending some time in the U.S., his friends say he applied for a Fulbright. He got the scholarship, and before heading off to Syracuse, he bought a motorcycle and decided to take a road trip. One picture from the trip shows him stopped by the side of the road. He's on tiptoes. His back is arched and his head is thrown back, as if he's blown away by the sunset that's in front of him. A friend says at one point, Basil ended up in Afghanistan. It was a surprise to everyone involved. The trip ended in India. That was right around the beginning of the Syrian uprising last spring. Basil went back home to Syria's capital, Damascus, and joined the protests. He was arrested and detained for a few days. After his release, he left for Syracuse. But friends say he just couldn't deal with the guilt that nearly everyone he knew was back in Syria, fighting and sometimes dying for what they believed would be a better country. Basil quit the program and made his way back home again. Our colleague Rima Marouche met him around that time.
And he told me I couldn't be away when a revolution is happening. I needed to come back. You can always study later.
Back in Syria, Basil trained other activists and citizen journalists how to shoot and edit their footage. Then at some point, he ended up in the city of Homs, a site of some of Syria's most brutal violence since the uprising began. Basil and four other activists were out filming the other night when government troops began shelling an area where rebels have taken refuge inside people's homes. We reached Basil's friend Hassan by Skype. He was with Basil that night. As we talk, we sometimes hear gunshots and explosions in the background. When the shelling started, we all ran, Hassan says. I stayed back to lock my car. I saw the first shell fall, then the second. We took Basil and the others to the field hospital, but the doctor said they were already dead. They had shrapnel everywhere. Hassan was the only one who survived. That night, the bodies were washed and shrouded in white sheets, and a small group marched them through the alleyways of Homs. "Heaven, open your gates," they chanted. "Your students are coming soon." Tiny flashlights illuminated Basil's face. Perhaps one of the most moving things Basil ever made was a short poem of a film called Saturday Morning Gift. It's based on interviews he did with a boy who survived Israel's bombing of Lebanon in 2006. A boy lies in a bed on a sunny morning, somewhere between asleep and awake. He remembers how one of his favorite things was to be woken up by his mom as she tickled his toes, started the coffee, played Arabic music. "I hate airplanes," the boy says, back asleep again. Then he has a nightmare about the explosion we're to assume killed his family. The screen goes dark, and a silhouette of a dreaming boy walks down the hallway to meet his fate. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
The women of Afghanistan have had a long struggle to try to improve their rights in that war-torn country. But now we have a story about Afghan women fighting back, quite literally. Some women in Kabul have taken to the boxing ring, and they're hoping to travel to London for this summer's Olympics. NPR's Ahmed Shafi reports.
Athletes are warming up in a dark training room at Kabul's Ghazi Stadium. They're Afghanistan's first female boxing squad, getting ready to represent girl power in a conservative country where many consider women participating in any sport to be taboo. But these young women have come a long way since the idea of setting up a female boxing team was conceived 5 years ago.
صنف که 5 نفر بود 2 نفر حاضر شد اونم بوکس میکنم.
That is Sabir Sharifi, one of the pioneers of female boxing in Afghanistan. He says it's been a long and difficult journey. In 2007, Sharifi started a recruiting campaign in girls' high schools. After 3 months of relentless speeches and presentations, he could only get a grand total of 2 girls to sign up. But he didn't give up. Within 2 years, he had 8 more on the team. After 5 years, he has 30 female trainees. But Coach Sharifi still needed to get the approval of their parents. Sharifi says he promised the skeptical parents that he would personally take the girls in his own car to the gym and bring them back home safely 3 times a week. He also addressed one of the key concerns of many of the parents. I reassured them that their daughters will not have broken noses on their wedding day, he says with a smile. It was not an easy decision for the parents. It was very difficult, says 19-year-old Shabnam Rahimi, the first Afghan female boxer to bring back a gold medal from a regional championship.
My dad received death threats because of me 2 years ago. The threat was serious, and I had to stop training for a whole month. But our coach came to my father and promised he would personally protect me. My father agreed, and I started training again.
Despite all the risks, Afghanistan's female boxers say they are determined to fight for their rights inside and outside the ring. They say this sport has given them hope to chase their dreams. Halima Sadat, a 16-year-old trainee, says she sees boxing as her first step toward fixing the ills of her community.
I hope to become a lawyer. I want to fight corruption and go after people who take bribes and who violate our rights. I want to make sure that powerful men don't get away with committing crimes.
The female fighters have few resources and limited space, but their high spirits and steely determination to improve women's status in this deeply conservative country is on display as they throw punches during this training session. Only one of them has been selected to participate in this summer's games in London. She is Sadaf Rahimi, and she is now training for the games in China. For the other young women still training in this dimly lit gym, Sadaf's participation in the London Games is about more than competing for international glory. For them, she represents rising girl power in Afghanistan. Ahmad Shafi, NPR News, Kabul.
For more international coverage, you can listen to your local NPR station. Or find a list at our website, npr.org. And while you're there, you can find more international stories by clicking on News and World. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Beasley.